TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. From the archives. Helen Caldicott and Michael Madsen, Into Eternity. This is a conversation between Helen Caldicott and Michael Madsen, whose film, Into Eternity, premiered in the U.S. in February 2011. It is a rebroadcast of Helen's weekly radio program, If You Love This Planet. Helen called Madsen one of the more extraordinary people I've ever interviewed, and I know that if you heard the initial broadcast, you will look forward to hearing it again. In the whole discussion about nuclear power and nuclear waste, the meeting of these two people, Helen Caldicott, who dedicated her life to alerting us to the nuclear danger, and the young Danish artist's completely new approach to the topic in his film, Into Eternity, make for a thought-provoking exchange. Into Eternity is a documentary on the building of the world's first permanent repository for nuclear waste in Finland. It shows not only the construction underway that will take 140 years, but shows the people involved, the scientists, regulators, and corporate executives who oversee this project. None of them will be alive when Onkalo, as the repository is called, will be finished in 2120. And they must expect this repository to remain intact and untouched by future humans for 100,000 years. Such is the danger and longevity of waste from nuclear power plants. Madsen says that Onkalo may become the most important expression of our civilization. He is intrigued by the fact that as humans have mastered the power of the universe, their discovery has outstripped human ability to understand the consequences. Even though our use of nuclear power will affect life for at least 100,000 years, we are not even capable of resolving the question of how to warn future generations of the danger of the material that we are leaving them. And is it not madness to believe that anything built by humans could ever last 100,000 years? The film and this conversation is so intriguing because these questions are the subtext to a philosophical exploration. Here's Helen Caldicott introducing Michael Madsen and the film.
My very special guest today is Michael Madsen, director of the new documentary film Into Eternity. Into Eternity is a film about the vast amounts of radioactive waste created every day by nuclear power plants the world over, and the constant challenge to find an adequate way to store it. A review of the film in The Guardian said, "Jaw-dropping, tackles a subject almost beyond comprehension. One of the most extraordinary, factual films to be shown this year. Madsen's film does not merely ask tough questions about the implications of nuclear energy, but about how we, as a race, conceive our own future." Michael Madsen is a film director and conceptual artist who has been guest lecturer at the Royal Danish Academy of Art, the Danish Film School, and the Danish School of Design. He is the director of several documentaries, including the award-winning To Damascus, a film on interpretation produced in 2005. Michael Madsen joins us now on the phone from Denmark. Welcome to If You Love This Planet, Michael.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to ask you first, how did you conceive to do a film about nuclear waste? What was it that initiated your interest in the whole thing?
Essentially, it was the 100,000-year aspect that somebody in Finland is building a facility that has to last in a foolproof manner for 100,000 years. That was what caught my attention, because I thought that, first of all, these persons, these experts, they will have to be able to relate to understand what 100,000 years is, which I think is very, very difficult. And secondly, they will have to have some kind of scenarios for the future, some ideas about how the future will look like in this time span. And that is what got me really, really interested. And then I thought that this has to be the first time in the history of mankind that we are building something like this, and also something which is not in any kind of religious context, as would be the case with the cathedrals of the Middle Ages or the pyramids. So my basic question has been, throughout making this film, what does such a facility tell us about our own time? What is its true significance? Perhaps it's something beyond being a storage place for nuclear waste. These are the things that I was trying to look into.
What do you mean by that last statement? Perhaps it's something beyond being a storage facility for nuclear waste. What do you mean by that, Mike?
Well, I had this kind of suspicion that this is not just digging a hole in the ground and essentially building a kind of a bunker-like structure. And I think that the aspect of the facility where this shows most clearly is that this facility is built in a way so that it is able to operate without any human interference. Once it is completed about 120 years from now, it'll be sealed off and then it'll enter and kind of silent mode operation. And the reason why this facility has to be independent of human surveillance and power supply, which is of course the case with any such interim facility in the world today, where the waste is, these pools that will cooling the waste, etc. The reason for this silent mode element is that in this time span, the scientist simply does not expect civilization as we know today to last. That means that the knowledge about what nuclear energy is and therefore what radiation is will simply vanish at one point. And therefore, it is not considered possible that any kind of, you can say that it has to be independent of what we humans know in the future, because otherwise it would be too dangerous. It's more safe if it can operate by itself. And that is because this facility, the Junkalo facility in Finland, is the first, possibly, as one critic said or wrote, possibly the first post-human structure on Earth. In its very construction, it has the notion that civilization as we know today will not last for this time span.
Or maybe humanity?
Well, I can tell you that some of the scientists that I've been working with for this film, they, in a way, have expressed less concern in terms of the danger, at least towards humans, because, yes, it is conceivable that mankind will not last for this long. And I can also tell you that in the Swedish legislation concerning nuclear waste, high-level nuclear waste, the talk is about creatures, living creatures, and not just humans.
Interesting. Well, yeah. There are several questions I have then, Michael. I've always thought that the waste, and I think the EPA in America, Environmental Protection Agency, or some such agency, says it should be isolated from the environment actually for 500,000 years, not 100,000 years.
It's 1,000,000 years in the US.
1,000,000. Well, therefore, yes. Why are you using the figure of 100,000 when it is 1,000,000 in the US?
Yes, that's a very, very good question. I'm using the figure of 100,000 years in into eternity because that is what the law in Finland states.
Oh, it's the law in
Finland.
So
in Finland, this is the quarantine time, so to say. And I can't tell you why it's only 100,000 years in Finland and 1,000,000 years in the US. I think that the only thing that these two figures really tell us is that the experts do not agree about how long this is actually dangerous. One independent nuclear waste scientist whom I consulted in making the film so that I would have somebody to sort of verify what I was being told by the participating experts in the film, and also just to make sure that I got the points. She told me that it should be at least 250,000 years. Mm. But one of the problems and one of the unknowns in making such a facility is that we don't have any experience with nuclear waste in such concentrations as will be the case in such a repository. What happens inside the waste is unknown because nuclear waste does not only contain plutonium and uranium. In the process, inside a reactor in a nuclear power plant, almost every known element in the universe is created. And that means that the exact composition of the waste is not entirely known. And what will happen inside the reactions that goes on in the waste is not fully clear.
Yes, there was a fair bit of work done on that by scientists relating to Yucca Mountain, where the U.S. decided to store its 64,000 tons of civilian radioactive waste in a volcanic mountain made of actually pumice, which is just ash from the volcano. And they talked about the fact that after 100 years, things are going to be very hot. I mean, we've got the zirconium fuel cladding, which probably will go along with the radioactive waste, and that reacts with water, and that causes hydrogen. And they also said it could get terribly hot, and that it, by 100 years, would have corroded through any containment that it was put in. And also, it shouldn't get wet, but they also found that the pumice mountain at Yucca Mountain let water through. Therefore, they were going to put, after 100 years, titanium baffles over the top of the containment vessels. But, I mean, who would decide to do that? And we'll all be dead. And will our second generation or our great-grandchildren or great-grandchildren know to do that or want to do that?
Well, that is the basic problem. Can we, first of all, is it fair towards the future generations to impose a burden on them in terms of maintenance? Secondly, is it at all possible? Because that will require that knowledge about what it actually is can be carried on. And this is, of course, this question about should we warn / inform the future or not for 100,000 years? That is what InterEternity is really sort of circling around. And the problem is, of course, that you can also put the argument forward that, in fact, it's better not to inform the future. That is at least actually the preferred strategy in Finland, simply to hide it. And Onkalo, which is the name of the facility, means hiding place. And the idea is that what we are actually fighting here is not a technological problem. We can make a kind of bunker. That's possible, we think. But an even bigger problem is human curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we may have some kind of stone tablets with information, it is still not clear if this will be understood 50,000 years from now.
Well, sure, because, you know, when you think back 2,000 years ago, which we now think is antiquity, that's when Jesus lived, they didn't even speak English. English hadn't been developed.
No.
That's only 2,000 years ago.
Yes, that is true. Regarding language, what we know for certain, the only thing is that it changes over time.
Yeah.
And that is why we would have problems in understanding a person from the Middle Ages, etc. But if the real problem is human curiosity, somebody would like to open such a place if they found some kind of indication that something is buried here, and you're not able to detect what it is because all knowledge about radiation is gone and you cannot smell it, feel it, or sense it in any way, then you have the real problem, because then you may have somebody who inadvertently opens it and brings out some of the material.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the village in Brazil where a hospital sent a capsule of cesium-137 to the rubbish dump because they didn't need it anymore, and a family found it, and they found that it glowed blue in the dark, and they used to paint it on their faces, and they ate it, and they put it under their beds and watched it at night. Well, that whole family died, but the whole village was contaminated simply because people had no idea what they were dealing with.
Exactly. And the problem is, of course, also that this may happen, and then somebody gets an idea that this is actually dangerous, and then it can be used as what we today would call a kind of dirty bomb. And there's also a source of military power in a waste repository like this.
You know, yeah. I think the Americans choose a million years because when you think about it, plutonium has a half-life of 24,400 years. Some people multiply that by 10 to get the total radiological life, but some multiply it by 20, which brings you up to half a million years. And then you see radioactive iodine 129 has a half-life of 17 million years. And there are quite a few isotopes that have extremely long half-lives. So I suppose to encompass the whole gradient of radioactive elements, and as you said, almost every element is made in a reactor, they've put the number at a million. But it would be interesting, wouldn't it, Michael, to research why the Americans have chosen a million years.
Yes, but, you know, when I asked the scientists in Finland, I received, in a way, two kinds of answers within the same company. The communication manager said, Michael, you have to understand that nuclear waste, high-level nuclear waste, becomes less and less toxic because of the half-life. So really, Michael, it's all the time diminishing the problem from day to day. And then the long-term safety expert, or the head of the long-term safety, he said, Michael, I do not agree with this way of talking about high-level nuclear waste, because essentially, when we're talking about these time spans, it is forever. Mm-hmm. In a human time scale, it's forever.
Yes.
So, and I think that is very, very true. To talk about 100,000 years or a million years doesn't really make sense. But what we have to think about is that it is about 100,000 years that Homo sapiens left Africa for the first time. That is what we're talking
100,000
about.
100,000 years. Then we could move on. I know that the Department of Energy in America have been employing anthropologists to work out what sort of signs to put on their radioactive waste dumps. Are we skull and crossbones or, the scream or what to put? Would you like to talk about that a bit?
Yes, because this is also what is discussed in Into Eternity, as I refer to these reports, which are just about the only ones in existence in the world. And
what, the anthropological reports?
Yes, and these discussions about what kind of marker could we envision. And the only thing that there has been some kind of consensus about is the scream to be some kind of universal symbol that would be able to be understood by any society, any culture, at any point in time. The problem is, of course, that, it's impossible to test if this is possible, but also you will still need the marker to survive for 100,000 years or a million years in the U.S.
That's right.
And you will also need this marker to stay at the same point.
Yeah.
I can tell you that there is an interesting case in the U.S. I think it is the first nuclear test blast. A concrete slab was placed there, I think about a cubic meter or something like that, which then with a plague on. But it's also a cow field, so the cows have been scratching their backs against this concrete slab for 40 years. And now I think it's moved something like 10 meters from this scratching.
And you wouldn't want any earthquakes either, or that sort of thing.
Yes, yes, exactly. And essentially, there are three strategies in terms of communicating towards the future. Mm. One is this kind of a marker with a universal symbol on it. The second one is to have a kind of archive system, which is really what the Finnish state opts for and which is discussed in the film. But then that, of course, depends on that one generation actually will pass on the information to the next generation.
Well, what do you
that
mean?
There is a kind of institution.
What do you mean an archive system? I don't understand
The Finnish idea is simply to have a kind of a library, a manned library. A manned library for 100,000 years. People who constantly upgrade the information.
Oh, well, that's a good idea. How absolutely pathetically, it's like a fairy tale. I mean, God almighty.
Yes. Yes, but I have to say that in the film there is the main responsible for this idea. He hesitates a little bit towards where he actually thinks this will take place.
He does.
But the last idea which has been discussed is that if we could create a kind of a myth that would then by itself be retold because of the strength in the narrative from generation to generation, then this would be another way of perhaps passing down information. And Into Eternity, in a way, tries to perform such a task in the way of that it is narratively constructed. But these are the three strategies, and they all have problems.
Well, really, we're talking about Jesus Christ parables that have lasted and passed on generation to generation for 2,000 years. Now, the other thing, talking to you, Michael, I'm interviewing Michael Madsen, who made this absolutely wonderful film called Into Eternity, which it's very slow-moving, very thought-provoking, and people's jaws just drop when they watch it. They hadn't entertained this sort of philosophical approach to what we're actually doing at the moment. But, you know, as we talk, Michael...
And, of course, we have to understand that today all the waste in the world is sitting next to every single power plant in these pools where it needs to be cool for 40 years at least. And if we imagine that these facilities will need to be turned into some kind of permanent solution, then there will be these repositories all over the world. And so it is not only certain parts of the earth that may have a problem if they leak these facilities. Mm. It may be many different zones.
Yes, it will become ubiquitous. When I first wrote my book, Nuclear Madness, back in 1978, I said you can imagine generations hence waking up in the morning, the food already radioactive, the breast milk already radioactive, the children being born deformed or with genetic disease, developing their cancers at the age of 6 because they're exposed to radiation. That's the legacy that we leave to future generations. And although the Finns are trying to do something about putting this waste deep in the earth, and we'll talk about that in a minute, I can't see, with the spread of nuclear power all over the world at the moment, I can't see people doing what the Finns have done. Can you, Michael?
Well, I'm trying to sort of pass on those questions through my film to any individual in the audience.
Yeah.
But I think that it is clear that something needs to be done, because the nuclear waste does exist. And even though you may be against the use of nuclear power, this will not in itself make the nuclear waste go away.
No.
So something needs to be done with the waste we already have.
Yeah.
And as we have seen at the Fukushima power plant, also the spent nuclear fuel, the nuclear waste sitting next to the reactors, has made troubles, because, of course, the cooling of this waste also went away along with the reactor cooling. And this is the situation all over the world. This can happen at any site in the world with a nuclear power plant. And as is discussed in Into Eternity also, the problem of world wars or wars, new states being formed, all of this instability above ground is a real threat to such facilities. And therefore, I could also get the idea that having it buried may be a better solution than having it above ground. Some of the scientists in the film, they told me that they find it very difficult to think that every nation in the world will be able to have such a facility as they are building, due to financial restraints in the third world, so-called third world. But also in a country like Japan, they said they can never build a repository because of the geological conditions. But of course now, in my opinion, I fear that that this is de facto what they have now in the Fukushima, because it'll never be possible to just dismantle this wreck of a nuclear power plant.
They simply
have to cover it up like in Chernobyl.
Chernobyl. Yeah, yes. But it's still hot, and Unit 1 is still fissioning.
But that's why if they can get sort of total control, they can only cover it up. But what I think is important to understand in all of this discussion is that 100,000 years is perhaps beyond human comprehension.
Mm.
It is perhaps such a vast time span that we simply cannot relate to it. We may have a similar problem, for example, in Japan. One reason why the authorities, as I understand it, constantly have not been telling the full scope of the events, one reason behind that could be that it is more or less unthinkable that evacuate more than 30 kilometers, perhaps the whole of Tokyo area, etc. These things are sort of bordering of what is not only physically possible, but also to really understand how bad this is can also be difficult to understand because it's simply sort of outside of human comprehension. And of course, we humans, which is probably a good thing, tend to hope for the best. But in these matters, and as I always say about this film, that, you know, nuclear energy stands on the shoulders of almost all the science, all the scientific knowledge that we have about the universe. It is really the powers of the universe that we are harvesting. So much knowledge is sort of fused together in this technology. And in that sense, it's the hallmark of human civilization. But the flip side is the waste, which has this time span built into it, which I believe is beyond what we can really understand. So on the one hand, it's based on deep understanding in scientific respect, but it also has this very, very difficult time span for us even to relate to. And then if we cannot relate to it, if we cannot understand it or grasp it, it's suddenly impossible to act responsibly.
I'm interviewing Michael Madsen, who made this incredible film called Into Eternity, and it's about the Onkalo project in Finland.
Onkalo is the world's first permanent storage for waste from nuclear power plants. Blasted into bedrock in Finland on the island of Olkiluoto on the shores of the Baltic Sea, it has to remain secure for at least 100,000 years. Many thanks to Helen Caldicott for permission to rebroadcast this intriguing conversation between her and Michael Madsen. The Canadian writer Naomi Klein said about Helen Caldicott, "She has the rare ability to combine science with passion, logic with love, and urgency with humor." Helen Caldicott has devoted the last 40 years to an international campaign to educate the public about the medical hazards of the nuclear age. This program was recorded by Helen's radio project, If You Love This Planet. Come back when TUC Radio returns for the conclusion of this conversation. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Time of Useful Consciousness is an aeronautical term. It's the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time for useful projects to rescue the planet and the plane. My name is Maria Gleuden. Thank you for listening.